Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in. I'm so happy to have you here this week. Really excited to bring you this show. We've been working on it for quite a while, and it's on the spirits of India. We're going to be talking about liquors produced in India and actually one produced here in the United States. So we have three fine producers joining us. Ashok Chokalingam, who is the head distiller and director of sales for Amrit Whiskey. They make all kinds of really lovely whiskeys and a bunch of other stuff. And he will be joining us from Bangalore, India, through the wonder of technology. Also joining us from Bangalore, India, will be Rushab Abib. And Rushab is the product director for Coffee Feni. And Feni is a very interesting traditional liqueur. It hails from the area of Goa in southern India. There's different variations, but this one is made from the fruit of the cashew. Really interesting stuff there. And they have operations in India, and I believe they actually have a production facility in Vietnam as well. And we're starting to see more of Coffee Feni around the United States and in Europe and elsewhere. And then Monica Badlani, who is the COO and also a partner in Somras Cream Liqueurs. And these are made here in the United States, but very Indian-inspired, using many ingredients from India. Indian spices, really, really lovely cream liqueurs. I think they kind of raise the bar there a little bit in that category. And Monica joins us from Chicago. If you're listening on the radio, go get the podcast, because we have our extended podcast only segment where we're going to taste through a bunch of the stuff that we didn't get to during the first three segments here that you're going to hear coming up that air on the radio as well, as you know. So a lot of great tasting going on there. And we will have three guests from our quote-unquote studio audience, not really our studio audience, but some of the other folks that work with our three primary guests will be joining us in the podcast-only segment as well. So really cool stuff there. Yep. Great show coming up next week. We're going to be coming back to some of our Tales of the Cocktail-based programming. We are going to be doing a show on inclusivity and entrepreneurship and several other things. It's going to be based on a seminar that took place at Tales of the Cocktail a few weeks back. We're going to be joined by Jackie Summers, who, also known as Jack from Brooklyn, who put the seminar on, a friend of mine, friend of the show. Also, Lynette Marrero, who was a very noted bartender from New York and also the founder of Speed Rack, which is a bartender competition that raises funds and awareness for breast cancer. Samara Davis, who is a friend of mine also. Samara founded the Black Bourbon Society, and also Yannick Benjamin, also a friend of mine, who is a noted sommelier in New York as well. So really, really interesting show. Samara, Jackie, and Yannick did a similar show with me last year at Tales of the Cocktail, and Lynette Marrero was new on the panel this time. And the topic material of the panel is different, of course, but somewhat related. And Lynette joined them this time. So all four of them from that panel will be joining us on the show next week. Also want to let you know a little bit of news. We're going to be making a couple tweaks here pretty quick on the NOLA Drink Show. Nothing too earth-shaking. If you're listening here on the radio, we're going to be changing time slots. So what was going on before, as you probably know, you hear the new show on Mondays at 7 and then an encore performance on Fridays at 7. We're going to flip that around. We're going to actually start bringing you the new shows on Friday, which I'm really excited about. And at least for the time being, the encore performances will be available to you Monday at 7 o'clock. We just think it makes more sense because, as you know, we tape the show, and that way you're going to hear the stuff when it's fresher, when it's newer, as opposed to 3, 4, 5, 6 days later hearing it. You're going to hear it 2 or 3 days later, so maybe even sooner than that. So that's going to be really fun. And then our podcast only segment, Another Shot with NOLA Drinks, is going to be brought to you a little bit differently. Those will be distributed separately, kind of as a standalone conversation, a shorter conversation, so you can sort of catch that if you on the podcast. We'll still have the podcast of the radio show, as we always do, with the main interview. But then also Another Shot's going to kind of be its own thing, where you can catch a shorter conversation, kind of a standalone question or topic, perhaps with our guests. And those will be compiled throughout the month and put out separately. So more of a bite-sized chunk of the NOLA Drink Show. So really, we're still doing kind of the same thing. We're just sort of changing the timing of it on the radio and breaking up how you can digest the pieces of the NOLA Drink Show. We think it's just going to be a little bit more user-friendly and listener-friendly for y'all out there. And I do appreciate you being a supporter of the show and a listener of this show. Hey friends, we're gonna take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and we're gonna come back and chat about the spirits of India. Come on back.
I was born by the river in a little tent, yeah, just like that river I've been rolling ever since. It's been a long time coming. I know a change gonna come. Oh yes it will. Well, it's too.
My book has got a hole.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. As always, very happy to have you here. And as you know, we are talking about the spirits of India, of course, the liquors of India. And on a very broad-based conversation, I'm really excited to have three great producers with us here today. And I'll start with you, Monica Badlani from Somers. How are you, Monica?
Pleasure to be here, Brian. I'm doing well today. How about you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. Here, taping a Thursday morning, so people are hearing this a little bit later. But you're there in Chicago, Monica. Thanks for making time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Ashok Chokalingam, who is absolutely as far away from us as he can possibly be right now, from Bangalore, India, from Amrit Whiskey. How are you, Ashok?
I'm fine. Thank you, Brian. It's been a pleasure to be here. And really look forward to have some fun with all of you.
Great. Thank you. And thanks for staying up late. I think, what is it, about 9:30 your time, 9:45 in the evening,
yeah,
something like that?
Yeah, close to 10 p.m.
Okay, great. I'd be in bed if I was ready. So thanks for staying up late. I appreciate it. And you're the head distiller at Amrit Whiskey, correct?
Yeah, I play a kind of dual role. I'm head of international sales and the head distiller.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
I do portfolios.
Great. And Monica, you're the COO and a partner in Somers Cream Liqueurs, right? I want to make
that
sure
is correct.
Yes. Get your title.
No, thank you.
Absolutely. And then Rushab Abib. Rushab, how are you?
I'm doing good, Brian. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you. Where are you, Rushab?
Oh, I'm right now in Bangalore.
Oh, you're in Bangalore too? Okay.
Yeah. I'm along with the show right now. So basically, I'm from Goa. So due to my work schedule, I had to be here.
Great. Yeah. And you're the product director for Coffee Fenny, correct? Is that the title? Title?
Yes. So I'm the marketing manager over here. So I'm the marketing head of the company. So we have a production as well as, you know, the other things handled by my family. So this is a family business. I'm the third generation for the same business. It was started from my grandfather, then my dad. And I'm the third generation which is taking Fenny to the international level, because that is where the history comes from.
Gotcha. Excellent. Well, thank you all for joining us. And also thank you, Rushab, for staying up late as well. Next time we'll get you and Ashok in the same space, since you're both in Bangalore. That'll make it easier. Well, hey, so what I wanted to do here in the first segment, y'all, is talk a little bit about the history and tradition of alcohol production in India. I realize that's a very big and longstanding history. And this is, you know, kind of where I thought we would start. Does somebody, maybe Rushab or anybody, I'll leave this up to anybody who wants to add and leave it open to all three of you to answer the question. But can we maybe get the short version of, even if we start a little later on in the history of things? Maybe you want to start with traditional liqueur production, Rushab?
Yeah, so coming down to Fenny in specific, so this is where we are specialized into. So Fenny has a very long history. It starts from the arrival of Portuguese in India. So a pretty long time back, you know, 400 years ago. So Portuguese were also in Brazil. So this particular fruit where we distill the Fenny, it's a cashew apple, basically we call it cashew apple. So that particular tree was native to Brazil. So the reason why Portuguese got it is because it would help soil erosion. That was the reason they found that particular tree, and they were having their own, you know, set of land acquired, or I would say conquered. I don't know at that point of time how it sounds. But they wanted to keep the fertility of the soil, and India is quite fertile soil, but they didn't have this. So that is where this thing came from. So eventually, as soon as it came down, you know, now who figured out distilling this particular fruit into, you know, a spirit was something which is really not clear. But eventually, you know, people figured out that, you know, once we distill a liquor out of cashew, it gives a really potent drink. So it started off more of like, I would say, in a medicinal way in Goa. Then eventually it caught up because, you know, there was advent of Europeans and, you know, the British came down. There was a lot of technology which was sourced in, and, you know, the European way of distillation also entered the market. And eventually Fenny started getting, you know, refined and more refined, and, you know, and it came down to a clear spirit. So from there, you know, it has been there as a part of the Goan culture very specifically, because Goa was a part of the Portuguese and the rest of India was part of British. So it always was in a way that, you know, it was a different country altogether. So it was very, you know, a part of this particular region. So the history of this is, you know, more of like, you know, comes from Brazil, comes from Portugal, comes from Africa, even in Vietnam, for their example, you know, the cashew plantation actually went from India to Vietnam. So when we actually have a distillation in Vietnam as well. We have a distillery in Vietnam. So it was surprising to know that, you know, even the cashew plantation, which genetically is identical from the Indian cashew. So, yeah, it has a long history.
A long history. Well, and let me ask you this. So I think you touched on this, Rishabh, but so I'm assuming like we're the still using stills in distillation. Were the stills initially brought from Europe? Is that where the vector was to bring? I'm assuming there was traditional distillation going on for a long time before
Yes. So there are two aspects to it. There are two parts of the story. So one was that, you know, there was a traditional distillation in the sense which we refer to as the Indian style of distillation. We also have a specific product called Lavni to keep that ancient distillation alive. So they used to use a mud pot to distill. So they had this mud pot distillation which was happening, and they had this bamboo shoot to, you know, get the fumes out, and they used to manually cool the fumes and get the distillate out. So that is how the natives used to distill. Eventually, what happened was that, you know, that was a really slow distillation process. You know, maximum you can do it is like, you know, it's a more of a handcrafted thing. It was not very commercially viable. So in, as and now how the demand for Fenny was growing, you know, it's something that everybody wants to have a taste of Fenny if you come down to Goa. Then it became a little more commercial. Then we most of the people started getting into pot distillation, which is more very similar to, you know, whiskey or, you know, other liquor. But the advantage of Fenny would be that, you know, it's a fruit which has natural enzymes to it. So we don't add any enzymes. We don't add any external stuff to it. It's purely natural. The fermentation also happens naturally. Therefore, the entire liquor which comes out of this particular process is purely natural and doesn't have any, you know, sulfurs or enzymes or anything added. It's something which is, you know, we can almost say that, you know, it's organic in nature because there's no additives to it at all.
Okay.
So that benefit which the natives saw, you know, that is where it got so popular in that particular region.
Great. Thank you. Excellent. Ashok, what would you add to that, especially maybe say up in Bangalore? Was there a historically different approach to distillation, and what was some of the background of spirits and liquor making in that part of India?
India per se, I think there is a misconception in the West that like people in India don't drink for religious reasons.
That's true.
I know that's not true.
That's completely wrong.
Yeah.
Okay, like you know, distillation was happening in India as early as 300 BC. So not many people know that. Rum was originally distilled in India in the name of Arak. It was during the British colonization and the worldwide demand on sugar was through the roof. So the British took sugar cane plant and the people from the east of India to the Caribbean and then cultivated sugar cane growing in the Caribbean, and then ended up with the distilling there as well, and then coined the word rum. And so the rum punch again originated in India and then became popular across the British colonies around the world. When the British Armed Forces or the East India Company were living in India, and you know, the Brits love their alcohol, right? So the long voyage from Great Britain to India, the beer that they had gone bad. So that's how IPA basically came into the picture, where they added hops and then IPA was born. So the rum punch comes from the word, a Hindi word called panch, which means five. So the rum punch always had a five ingredients. So you had a sugar, you had a juice, you had alcohol, and then the spices and water. So these are the five ingredients traditionally used for rum punch. And then it went on to become popular around the British colonies around the world. And this category became a widely known phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to whiskey, and again, not many people know that the oldest whiskey distillery in India dates back to 1827. And the very first distillery in India was built up in the Himalayas by a British man called Robert Dyer. And the name of the distillery is Kasauli Distillery, and that distillery is still in existence. So that was the beginning of whiskey culture in India. And then now we went on to become the largest consumers of whiskey on the planet.
Very interesting. So I'm assuming a very Scotch influence on the whiskey production initially?
Big time.
Okay. Excellent. Monica, we got about 4 minutes or so before 3 minutes before we take a break. What would you add to that, please?
Let me add to that. So just, so the history of alcohol in India is very interesting, because up until about 20 years ago, it was really predominantly focused on, hard spirits, predominantly whiskey and beer. And so, we've got two whole categories, I would say wine and cordials and liqueurs, that weren't even being addressed in India on a global, on a national scale, right? And so about 20 years ago, the production of wine started to increase substantially. And now you see, the large winemakers having wineries actually in Nasik near Bombay in India. And that is a relatively new phenomenon. The second thing is, again, cordials and liqueurs, again, a very new phenomenon in terms of cocktail culture. That is within sort of the last 5 years in India, besides things like the rum punch that Ashok mentioned, right? And so cocktail culture in general is starting to pick up. And so people are starting to see this interest in cordials and liqueurs, and there's really, again, nothing available with the Indian flavor profile in it that can be used on a broad scale to address those things. So those two categories are extremely new. And then back to what was said before about Indians not drinking, it is quite common misconception, but part of it too was that there was a latent demand. People didn't have an opportunity to drink some of these other categories. And so you see that those are some of the fastest growing categories in India right now.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I know, for example, that several of the noted world-class bars that we're starting to see enter into the scene are in places like Bangalore and Mumbai and places
That's
like
correct.
that are really emerging. And with the wine production, are we seeing that? Obviously, I'm guessing we're talking about grape wines in the higher latitudes then, correct? Sort of a little bit further north in the country.
Yeah, you see some of that as well, but you also see some of it. I'm actually not familiar with the latitudes of the Nasik region in general, but you do see both red and white being produced there as well. So, I think you get the grapes, the knowledge of the grapes from both Europe and America in terms of the types and the varietals that are being exposed there. And so I think it is, not just the sort of higher regions. The higher regions have also been making wine out of other types of fruits for a very long time, but more local craft type offerings.
Okay, excellent. And we're going to take a break, you guys, in about a minute. I just want to say, and you guys are all sticking around for our podcast only segment, where we're going to get more into the specific products and the distillations and things like that. But I am sipping on the Coffee Fenny, and it's really, really lovely. It's very interesting. I get sort of a quince note, a pear note on it, and it's actually, and it's a little stronger than I expected it to be when I first tasted it, but it's really great, and we will share, of course, bottle shots and all that stuff with everybody out there. And Rishabh, you'll give us a bigger explanation about the distillation a little bit later on in the show. Is that good?
Yep. Right.
Okay, friends, we're gonna take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back.
Once more.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. Brian Diaz here. Thanks for listening in to the NOLA Drink Show. And as you know, we're talking about the spirits of India, and I'm pleased to be chatting with Monica, Vrishab, and Ashok. And thank you, all of you, for making time today, and especially Vrishab and Ashok for staying up late over there in Bangalore. And Monica, thanks for you know, making it happen at 11 o'clock or so our time here, Central Time in the U.S.
Exactly.
Yeah. So really interesting in the previous segment, y'all talking about, you know, some of the history and some of the tradition. And maybe what we can talk about here is a little bit of the contemporary market in India. And I was telling you all a story during the break about my first introduction to Indian spirits, I believe was in Fiji. It might've been Indonesia, but I'm pretty sure Fiji. And I tasted something that was called whiskey. And to my taste, it was very different than what I was expecting from whiskey. We'll leave it at that. So can you kind of, Ben, maybe I'll throw this to you first, Ashok. Can you kind of tell us what are people drinking in India today? And then what's sort of different versus what I was talking about just now versus, say, something that you're producing, what Vrishab produces, what Monica produces?
Okay. India is a land of opportunity for everyone. Now, we have a huge range of, say, for example, whiskey available into the market. So we have what we call is something called as IMFL, which is Indian-made foreign liquor. So the base spirit for whiskey, brandy, rum, gin, vodka, everything is the same. It's basically what we call is an extra neutral alcohol, which is distilled from molasses. I presume now we are the largest producer of sugarcane in the world. Probably we have just overtaken Brazil. We used to be number two. So we have a huge byproduct of molasses available, which can be converted into alcohol. Now, we have a fight going on with the European Union for a long, long time with regards to what's the definition of whiskey is. Because whiskey in Europe is basically cereal-based. It's made out of grain. Because in Europe, you don't grow sugarcane, maybe apart from a small percentage of area in Spain. Because cold nature of Europe, where it doesn't allow you to grow sugarcane. So at the end of the day, each country is trying to place what they have. And that's how whiskey was made in Scotland and Ireland, because it is a cereal-based economy. Whereas on the other hand, in India, we have a huge byproduct of molasses available because of the very huge production of sugarcane.
So Ashok, is it fair to say then, basically, I think if I catch what you're saying, that, you know, this is what is available and people like to drink, so this is what we're going to use to make alcohol. Is that a fair way to characterize it?
Okay. Exactly. So, however, the situation is changing now, where predominantly most of the blended whiskies are now made out of grain rather than molasses. So more and more grain distilleries are popping up all around the country, and ethanol production is going up as well. The government is basically giving a lot of encouragement to the distiller to make ethanol as well as potable alcohol for the liquor industry. So now I would say a majority of the blended whiskies are made out of grain, necessarily not matured. It's a basically grain-based spread and blended with the matured malt whiskey or flavored. Like even in the United States, you have a lot of flavored whiskies. If you look at the TTB regulations on what whiskies, we have an opportunity for a huge range. It's a question of how you basically label it. That is where we perhaps lack in India. And then we have a lot of premium brands, like single malt is really up and running, and people are really catching up, because we have 300 million people who are termed as to be a middle class income group, which is equivalent to the whole continent of the United States and the country of the US, and then the whole continent of Europe in terms of the population base. And then the opportunity that what we have is like as great as what we have in the US or in Europe. So that's how the market is now evolving, I would say.
Great. Excellent. And before I ask the same question to Vrishab and Monica to ask them to add stuff, we are just give us a brief description, if you would, Ashok, of the Indian single malt. So it's an example of what you were just talking about, single malt whiskey, very much kind of, I think, going for a Scotch approach to making it. But this is 100% Indian barley, correct?
That's right. So the whiskey that you are sipping is Amrut Indian single malt whiskey, which is 100% made from that's right, malted barley grown up in the north of India. It's distilled the same way as how a Scotch single malt spirit is distilled. The only difference between Scotch single malt and Amrut is the way how it is matured. So when people ask me how Amrut single malt is different from a Scotch single malt, I often tell people Amrut in particular is a missing link between Scotland and Kentucky. The reason is the way how the spirit is produced is very similar to Scotch in terms of, from an American perspective, the mash bill, where we use 100% malted barley, water, and yeast. That's it. We don't use any other ingredients to make the spread. But when it comes to the maturation, we lean more towards Kentucky because of the climatic condition under which we operate from. So our working temperature range is like 9 degrees Celsius to 41 degrees Celsius in the midsummer. So there is a huge contrast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even the so-called winter in December here in Bangalore, we might have about like close to 9 degrees Celsius at about 4 a.m. in the morning. And then midday, we are back up to 26, 27 degrees Celsius. So the cask expand and contrast during the day and night, in addition to the very low relative humidity around in Bangalore, where it's like roughly about 50% relative humidity, which is far, far less as compared to what you would see in Scotland.
In Scotland, yeah.
That's the reason why I say we lean more towards Kentucky when it comes to maturation. So the strength of alcohol goes up in the barrel every year for us, which is similar in Kentucky. So what we call is ethanol concentration, whereas in Scotland is an ethanol dilution. So every year the strength drops down because the humidity is very high and then the temperature is low. In which case, the alcohol evaporates from the barrel, leaving the water behind. So it's basically, you know, at the two end of the spectrum.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll say very quickly, I appreciate you saying that because the mouthfeel to me drinks like a Scotch, but there's a nice, very pleasant sweet note on this that does remind me of bourbon.
Exactly. That's basically from the wood. We use a combination of New American oak and a bourbon barrel for maturation. So, which injects a lot of vanilla and sweet caramel into the whiskey. And then the extraction from the wood is far, far harsher than Scotland. So that's why the spread, you have an element of fruitiness, which basically hiding behind, it basically revolves when you sip it and taste it. In the middle ground, you see the fruitiness. But as you rightly said, on the forefront, it's a lot of vanilla and demerara sugar and caramel.
Absolutely.
That the sweetness comes from.
Absolutely. Well, let's do this, y'all. Let me take a break now because just a good time to take a pause, and we're going to come back, and I'll ask Vrishab and Monica to add to what we were just talking about, contemporary, and we'll talk a little bit more about the world market, and then we're going to taste the Somros cream liqueur during that segment as well. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back.
Dad's been shucking dozens since 42. Iron tub I.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Happy to have you here, friends. And yes, we are chatting about the spirits of India, and I'm very pleased to be joined by Monica, Vrishab, and Ashok. And I appreciate all three of you taking time. When we took the last break, we were kind of talking about the contemporary scene in India, and Ashok was giving us a really good picture and talking a lot about the whiskey market. Vrishab, let me ask you kind of the same question, if you want to add to that for a minute or so, and maybe down in Goa, because that's where you're from. is it sort of a mix of drinking traditional stuff like Feni and then a whole global aspect to what's going on, or what are you seeing?
I think Ashok almost cleared most part of it. So I would just want to add on, you know, specifically when we're talking about Goa. So Goa is more of a kind of a party place, you know. It's where all the parties happen in India. So that's where a lot of consumption also happens. So we do have a lot of long history, as Ashok rightly said, you know, with all the other drinks. But somewhere down the line, there were a lot of native drinks which are native to India, which started in India, which were taken a back step for a certain time. You know, especially when you talk about, let's say, cashew feni. There's also a kind of feni called coconut feni. And there is another drink which is really good. You know, it's called Mauha. There is a local drink which is distilled from mangosteen. It's called Morga. So there were a lot of local drinks which were native to the Indian culture, which were, you know, local to a lot of these places. Because when you're talking about India, right, it's a huge market. It's like, you know, we have like every state is like its own country with its own language, its own traditions. And,
right.
You know, it gives a wide range of, you know, climatic conditions where you grow a lot of different fruits and you have a lot of different alcohols which were very much localized. But eventually now, at this point of time, when the Indian market is growing, and as well as, you know, the aspirations of the Indians are like, they want to have more, they want to have different, they want to try it out. Now people are not shying behind on trying new things. So this is the really right time for, you know, the drinks which were left behind, I would say, in the entire global alcohol industry, to take a front stage, like especially like, you know, when you're talking about cashew feni or coconut feni, all this was used as more of a medicinal value. That is what Indians believed long time back. And, you know, it was much of a local industry. It was not as organized as you have different liquors in the market. So initially now the next generation, or rather say the aspirational generation, is trying to take these indigenous spirits to the global market and to bring it out that, you know, that these are one of the finest distillation spirits which India has to offer to the global market. So that is where, you know, we are coming up from. Yeah,
that's great. So, and I'm assuming, and I'll move to you in a second here, Monica, like we were talking about the growth of the craft cocktail scene in India, I'm assuming a lot of the craft cocktail scene in general globally is probably helping drive, Rishabh, what you just said. But I'm assuming that the craft cocktail bartenders in India itself are embracing local spirits, traditional spirits, and that's how we're starting to discover them in the broader parts of the world.
Yeah, because there's a lot of so for example, you know, you with these kind of drinks, you get a flavor profile. You know, you have a lot of flavors to play around with. So
right.
When you're talking about a bartender or a cocktail mixer, he would want to have a different taste. So what can be done new? What is something that you can keep your consumer excited about? What is that, you know? So when you're talking about, when you're trying to answer these kind of questions, so these spirits come along with the flavor of the fruit they are from, or the grain they're from, or the distillation process they come from. So all that, you know, the new taste which add on to this existing, let's say, cocktails, or, you know, some people would want to have something sweeter, some people would want to add some
sure.
spices to it. So that's where, you know, this new spirits come into picture, where this is more of a segment wherein, you know, people are ready to try what's new. What's
and
new
look
in the
for,
market,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, see a different flavor
yeah,
profile.
So,
okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so
great.
Great.
Well, Monica, let me mention then to you, or bring this to you, because we're talking, in your case, it's a U.S.-based product, but it's Indian-inspired, right?
That's correct, yeah.
So, I mean, what would you kind of, how would you take the conversation from here then to talk about what you
yeah,
all do?
Yeah, so, you know, thank you, Brian. So a couple of things. One is that, you know, when I was growing up and I would visit India, a lot of the alcohol consumption was at home. So you might drink at home with your friends or your family, and then you would go out to eat. And when you went out to eat, you may or may not drink. And so there was less of a, I say, cocktail culture or even a drinking culture inserted outside. There was a lot more consumption at home. And that may not be the case everywhere. I can imagine Goa, you're eating a lot, you're drinking a lot more outside as well because of the party culture, right? So, but that has changed dramatically. And so I think modern India, there's a lot more on-premise opportunity, a lot more on-premise creativity. With that, what was interesting is we found, we launched Somerus about 6 years ago, but what we found was that there were no cordials in the world at a global level that had Indian spices in them. So we know the history of the world, right? Wars have been fought over Indian spices, but that flavor profile just doesn't exist, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that there are a lot of favorites in terms of Indian recipes that people really enjoy. And so we wanted the cordial category needed to be created for the country. And that's what we're attempting to do.
Okay, great. It's I'm having a sip and I'll have you tell us a little bit about this, Monica, the Somerus coffee liqueur. And this is, this is delicious. And I mean, and people might say, well, you know, why coffee liqueur? Because there are several out there on the market. But you mentioned with Indian spices, there's a really beautiful, am I wrong, maybe a nutmeg flavor on this that I'm getting? And
yeah, you're getting some of the chicory. So if you can believe it, people think about like chai, Indian chai, as like the tea that's really very popular in part of the country. But, you know, South Indian coffee is also extremely popular, and that is made with chicory. And so it has some of the same roots as New Orleans coffee, for example.
I was just going to say, there you go.
Yes, and some of a lot of the same traditions in terms of how it's filtered, that kind of stuff. And so because it's such a popular drink, we thought, well, why not add some rum to it? So the coffee, the filter coffee in India is already made with sort of cream and a sweetener with chicory and Arabica beans. And so that is where this comes from as well. So it's actually quite a popular Indian drink.
I like that thinking because, you know, how can you really go, let's just add rum to something. I think that that's it's really hard to mess that up. So I appreciate that. And is it just, let me, about the coffee then, similar, I'm guessing here, the story in New Orleans, of course, that most people accept is, you know, coffee was expensive and, you know, and hard to get at times and things. And so chicory was a way to cut the coffee and make it last long, or, you know, get more out of it. Is that the same in India then?
That's absolutely the same. I think, you know, there's a lot of different stories about it, but, you know, some of the first chicory coffee in India is sort of done through the army and done sort of from the British. And in terms of the popularity of chicory coffee, it's because of this coffee houses that started to emerge at the time. And so because of that, it was already sort of a thing, I would say, prior to that. But same reasons that it was much cheaper to consume chicory, sort of coffee cut with chicory, you know, than coffee on its own. And so for a lot, we forget a lot of history. Coffee is a very expensive commodity. Tea is much, much cheaper, for example.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Well, you guys, let's do this. We're going to close out the portion of the radio show here in just a couple minutes. So if you guys could briefly tell people where they can find, I'll start with you, Vrishabh, where can we find information about Coffee Feni online, you know, website and social media and all that? Oh, you got to turn your mic on, Vrishabh. Here, look up. Okay, there you go. Be quick, please. About 30 seconds.
Yeah. Okay. So we have an Instagram page. It's called Coffee Feni. So we also have a website, which is on a company with the Heritage Spirits LLC.com and an Asian website, which is FrolicBeverages.com. So, so we have on Facebook, that's also Coffee Feni. So you can just go over there. You have all the cocktail mixes. You get all the information regarding how do you consume it, the upcoming product line and all those details, you know, what available, which are the states we are available in. All that metadata has been mentioned.
Great. All these links, friends, will be in our show notes when the podcast comes out. Monica, how about Somerus?
That sounds great. Thank you. So Somerus is how you spell it. So just www.somerus.com. All of our social handles are Enjoy Somerus. On our website, there's tons of recipes and where to find tools. So wherever you want to find us, right now we're in the U.S. only, but you can find us in a variety of stores in about 25 states.
Okay, excellent. And Ashok, where can we find information about Amrit?
Yeah, just to Google it, Amrit Indian Single Malt and Glass Revolution Imports and Inspired Spirits hashtag. That basically gives you all the information that you would need to buy our products in the U.S. This is pretty straightforward.
Okay, great. And again, all these we'll have all these notes, and you'll see everybody tagged in our social media and all that when the podcast comes out. Friends, thanks for taking time here. All three of you are going to stick around for another shot with NOLA Drinks. We're going to taste some more stuff, talk about production methodology, get into the weeds a little more, as we like to say. But if you are listening here on the radio, go to NOLADrinks.com to get the podcast. I appreciate everyone being here. Now more than ever, be kind to one another. As always, use your turn signal. And until next time, cheers, y'all.
like this. I said I call your name, but no one came. Now I see you become just like the company you keep. Then he said, all these saints and all these sinners will try to bend
All right, everybody, up another chat with Noel Drinks. Thanks for listening into the show. Friends, this week, certainly happy to have you here, and I hope you are learning something and enjoying the conversation with Ashok Vrishab and Monica. Right after this, the side of this here, after a brief musical interlude, we're going to bounce back over and continue our conversation with them. We're going to taste a few more things and continue discussing the topic, the spirits of India, and we're going to have three more guests pop in addition. And you'll see who they are on the other side. Here we go. All right, everybody, up another shot with Noel Drinks. Thanks for listening into the show, friends, this week. Happy to have you here. We've been chatting about the spirits of India, if you were listening before to the regular part of the show. And I'm pleased to be joined by Monica Badlani, who is the COO and a partner of Somros Cream Liqueurs up there in Chicago. How are you, Monica?
I'm good. How are you, Brian? Pleasure to be here.
Very good. Thanks for sticking around. I appreciate it. Also, Vrishab Habib, who is the product director for Coffee Feni, a very fine traditional Goan liqueur from India, but who is actually in Bangalore, India at the moment. Vrishab, thanks for sticking around and staying up late.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. Happy to be here.
Absolutely, a pleasure to have you here. And Ashok Chokalingam, and Ashok is the, thank you for correcting me the first time because you're the head distiller of Amrit Whiskey, but you're also the main sales guy. So you're not doing enough, Ashok. I think you need to actually put a few more things on your resume and add more to your job description.
No, I'm enjoying it. So as long as I'm enjoying it.
Okay, great. And we've been joined for the first time ever on a Zoom recording of this show. We have a studio audience here now. So we have Jane Campbell from Glass Revolution, who is the importer for Amrit Whiskey. And Jane, thanks for popping in.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. And Vicky Godvi, and Vicky is a partner with Vrishab in Coffee Feni. Vicky, how are you?
Pretty good, Brian. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. And you said, Vicky, you're in Jersey. Is that right?
Yes, I'm in Jersey City.
You're in Jersey City. Okay, so not. Well, you're into the afternoon, so you're good. And Phil Minasalli there, my friend from PM Brokerage here in New Orleans, and his cat. Phil, your microphone's off. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I wasn't sure if she was going to start meowing, you know.
Yeah.
It's that time of the day. She wants a snack, so.
Oh, fair enough.
But yeah, great to be here. This has been an awesome conversation. I look forward to hearing more about these products and yeah, let's get them into New Orleans so we can have cocktails in town with them.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, that sounds like a great idea. Everybody's in agreement on that one, Phil. And so just so people know, PM Brokerage is a very fine spirits brokerage based here in New Orleans. Phil is a consultant and spirits educator and broker, and he has the Amrit Whiskey as well as the Coffee Feni in his book here in our neck of the woods. So what we wanted to do, y'all, in this segment, as promised, was kind of just taste through some things a little bit more. And I know we tasted... Well, in the case of the Coffee Feni, we tasted it a little bit in the first segment that I recorded with you guys. But Vrishab, you were telling us some really interesting stuff about the distillation methodology and kind of comparing the traditional way that Feni was made versus what you guys are doing to derive the flavor profile that you want to derive and to also make it commercially viable. Can you kind of tell us a little bit more about that again?
Yeah, so as I was telling you that this is cashew was as a tropical fruit. So as I told you last time that you know once you pluck the fruit, it starts fermenting on its own. So we have like 24 hours to get the fruit to the distillation where we have to
Vrishab,
do the crushing.
Vrishab, sorry to interrupt. Can I just ask you to clarify? Because I think a lot of people maybe don't know. They might think cashew and they may just think the nut, but there's the fruit around that that's called the apple,
exactly.
Correct. And this is really what we're talking about, right?
Yeah. So we don't use the cashew nut for the to make the liquor. It's the cashew apple or the cashew fruit which is just below. Actually, it's not the fruit. It's the root of the nut. You know, it's the extension of the stem, right? So that will give the nutrients to the particular fruit. So it's but because of its shape, you call it cashew apple. So that's the part of cashew which we use to, you know, extract the juice. So one, this particular fruit has a very unique characteristic, like as I told earlier, that it starts fermenting on its own. So we have like 24 hours to get it from the farm to the distillery, and from there, you know, in traditionally it was like more like a wine, wherein you have this barefoot people, you know, crushing the fruit and taking it into a mud pot, and from there, you know, using firewood to distill it, and from there, you know, we collect it from a bamboo shoot, and then another pot wherein they would cool it with water, flowing water. So that was the most traditional way of distilling fenny. And from post that, it is eventually modernized, and right now, you know, we get the fruit and we, you know, crush the fruit, get the juice. The pulp is used for many other purposes, and that particular juice what we have, you know, that ferments on its own, because it has some built-in enzymes, so we need not add anything external to it. It's completely natural fermentation process. So once it ferments, you know, it pretty much, you know, it takes about 2 to 3 days to ferment the entire thing, and then we, you know, shift it to the distillation process. And there, you know, there are multiple ways of doing it with the same thing. You know, we have a spot distillation process, which is more of a traditional one. And right now we have pot and column distillation, which we are using to come up with new products with a more refined version of alcohol, which helps us to create, you know, the spice blends and ready-to-drink products in multiple flavors. Because that was something which was kept away from fenny, because nobody realized that, you know, it can be it can be made in a pure sense, wherein you can add other flavors to it, because it was a really strong drink, as you would taste. So the main thing about fenny I would like to add on would be that, you know, initially whenever, you know, you come down to Goa, you taste a natural fenny, or, you know, the traditional fenny, it will have its own pungent taste and flavor, which is an acquired taste for the locals, because that is something which the locals like. It's not that they dislike it. You know, if you don't have that, you know, they would say it's not even fenny. But when you're talking about the international palate, I know the flavor profile of people around the world, it's really difficult for them to accustom to that. And that is something which we were trying to figure out. You know, if you want to take fenny to the next level, what would be that, you know, people would want to go ahead with without losing the traditional fenny flavors. You know, we didn't want it to lose that. And when we started doing our tasting sessions, we figured out that, you know, the pungent taste and flavor was the main turn down for most of the people. So that is where coffee fenny comes into the picture. You know, the coffee fenny represents a more traditional fenny, which is, a spirit which has been, purely, we have got out that particular pungent smell, the flavor, and we have just left with the good part. And we have not even tweaked with the natural process of distillation. We wanted to call it the heritage spirit. And fenny is also recognized by Government of India as the heritage spirit of Goa, India. And it has a GI, like, you know, you have champagne for France and Scotland for Scotch. Fenny has GI to Goa. So this has been recognized, and this the particular process, you know, we were one of the first distillers who were, you know, figured out how to make a standardized process wherein people can follow that and get this particular drink into a standardized format, because having home distillation would not be, you know, it's not suitable for getting an FDI or a FDA or all those approvals, right? So we had to go according to the international standards. So we had to take the entire, distillation process had to be taken up to the standards of international markets.
Okay.
So it took quite a long time. You know, it was a hard work for like 2 to 3 years. You know, we had to just figure out the right profile, get the stuff done. And from there, yeah, what you taste is the fruit of our hard work of 4 to 5 years. And finally, we have fenny launched in US in 2019. And from there, you know, we have been pretty much getting into one or two states every quarter. You know, that's been good. Other apart from the COVID times, you know, that was...
Yeah. Yeah, right, of course, and hopefully that will all change soon, and the markets will expand again. And very quickly, Vicky, I'll bring you in here, maybe just a minute or so. You mentioned that you guys are going to have something new coming out, and I just want to give you a minute or so to tell us about that.
Oh yeah, so I think Monica mentioned that, you know, about, you know, the whole spice thing, and you know how Indians, you know, relate to spice and things around that. So so what we are actually looking at is I think Rushab touched on one of the products that is Coffee Fenny. So we have, you know, something called as Coffee Lavani, which is actually the way Fenny was done 450 years ago, like, you know, the way Portuguese did it, and it's so popular back in Goa that the moment you make it, it's gone. Like, you know, I mean, people actually, you know, pre-book, more like the way they, you know, pre-book Maker's Mark and things around that. Sure. Like, you know, that's a very, very limited. Yeah, this is a very limited edition. The product we're, you know, soon introducing to the US market is a spiced version of Fenny. So what we have done is, you know, we have taken Fenny and, you know, just like anything in India, right? You just add spices to it. It makes it amazing and tasty. So we have added and infused, you know, these different spices into Fenny. And doing so has given it such an amazing flavor profile that we were at the trade show in 2019 in New York, and people loved it over here. People were like, okay, this is, I remember people calling it more like a garam masala in a bottle, you know, people, oh, you know, okay, coming back to us, you know, just try the product. So I think it's my personal favorite, like, you know, it's my favorite child, if I were to say so, and really cannot wait to introduce that to the US market.
And what's your timeline, Vicky, for that?
So I think the timeline is right now TBD, just looking at the current conditions, you know, due to COVID. But then I'm hopeful that maybe Q1 or Q2 of next year, you know, we should have that introduced in the market. So
okay, wonderful. And I really just very quickly, I mentioned this in the first segment. I really enjoy the Fenny, and I kind of get a pear note from it. I kind of get almost like a quince or almost like a lychee nut kind of flavor to it. And then there's something I can't quite put my finger on. It's sort of an earthy note. And maybe Phil, you want to jump in here? It's almost maybe sort of menthol, kind of an earthy note going on.
Certainly. I, as they were describing, Fenny to me is, it's so present in the room when you open the bottle. Like, it definitely has this intense aromatics that makes itself very, very present. Mm-hmm. And it's that type of fruit distillate that will bring out like a little bit of that earthy character. I'm for one that's like nerdy nosing notes and tasting notes. Like, I like to get it in front of the bartenders and be like, what do you got? What do you taste? But for me, it's like quite a bit of that earth component. It can be reminiscent of some like really, really exotic fruit brandies I've had in Colombia. They just have like almost like a subtle waxy note to it.
There you go.
But really true fruit flavor.
It's very, very enjoyable and very unique. So everybody needs to go out and taste it, because it's very difficult to sort of describe in some ways. But
yeah, I think just to add to that, you know, I think also it's the fibrous content, you know, when you look at the apple, the cashew apple. So it's actually the stem, right? So the stem is all the fibers, and that's the one that ferments. So that also adds a really good, you know, flavor profile to the drink.
That thank you for saying that, because that makes a lot of sense. And I mean this in a very positive way, that's that bit of astringency that we're actually getting in it, which is, okay, that makes a ton of sense. Ashok, let's move to some of the couple whiskeys that we didn't get to. We tasted the Indian single malt whiskey, which was from 100% Indian barley. And now in my glass, I have the Amrit Fusion, which is also a single malt whiskey, but our mash bill is a little different on this guy.
That's right. So Amrit Fusion single malt whiskey is a flag bearer of Indian single malt as a whole. I would say that because this is the most popular single malt whiskey from our portfolio, perhaps from India as a whole. By far, this is the largest selling Indian single malt whiskey on the planet, for sure. In India, for example, we can't even supply enough of it. And then in the US, it's one of the big sellers. In Europe, it's one of the big sellers. Now, the name Fusion suggests that there's a fusion of two different components. It's nothing but like we have Scottish peated barley imported into India and then mashed and fermented and distilled. And then we have the Indian barley, which is already mash distilled and then matured. So both the barleys are distilled and matured separately, and then we marry them together in a preparatory ratio to just reveal a whiff of peat. When you had nose, the peat smoke is not that much visible. It's kind of hiding behind. So you have a kind of milk chocolate on the top layer, and a nice whip of orangey citrus in the middle ground. And the peat is really hiding and playing, you know, hide and seek. And then when you taste it, honey, milk chocolate, citrus, everything comes in the forefront. The moment you swallow, you see the peat's kind of, you know, dancing on the tongue, like in a very humble and subtle manner, rather than like giving a big push. And it's 100 proof US. You can't even see that. That's the magic about this whiskey.
Right.
50% alcohol. It neither show it on the nose nor on the palate because of the conditions under which we mature. The wood extraction is like much, much more compared to the similar period of maturation in Scotland, which basically masks the spritty character in the whiskey, both on the nose and the palate.
And mellows it out, right? I think it's an amazing description you just gave, because I had a first sip of this last evening and I was shocked, because when I smelled it and then I tasted it, they were very, the nose, as you just said, and the palate were very, very different. And this to me has I'm not a huge fan of peated scotches personally, just my own taste. This is actually very restrained with the peat. I am a big fan of smoke flavor because I'm a big mezcal drinker and some of these other things that are like that. So the smoke is also very, very pleasant on this. I think this would actually play really nice in both in, you know, drinking it by itself with a drop or two of water, but I can see this actually performing very well in cocktails because it has the strength on the palate to actually shine through.
True. Yeah.
This is really very wonderful. And Ashok, I think Jane, you mentioned this to me when we were chatting on the phone. You guys have an interesting launch story, right? You didn't launch your product in, do I have this right? You didn't launch your product in India. You actually launched your product in Scotland. Is that correct?
Do I have that right?
That's a gutsy thing to do.
No, the thing is, if you are trying to, you know, sell up a single malt whiskey, home produced into the Indian market, we were doubtful on the outcome because of the fact that, like, I'm talking about the period in early 2000. At that price point, people in India love to drink their scotch, not an Indian single malt. So we were kind of, you know, forced to prove ourselves outside of the country first, and then before we can come back to India. I think that strategy really worked out well. When we started to get a lot of accolades across the Atlantic, people in India started to demand, why are you not making these brands available in India? So the launch of Amrut was in Scotland in 2004. So you got to be really courageous to go with the malt whiskey from India and to go and sell it in Glasgow City, right? It's no kidding. So we had a lot of positive press, and kind of, you know, the Indians have gone mad trying to sell oils to the Arab or coals to Newcastle kind of thing, you know, trying to sell a single malt from India to the Scots. So we got a huge amount of free publicity on the press the next day in Glasgow and around Scotland. Then over the years, I mean, you know, the first 4 or 5 years were like absolutely difficult. It was very hard to convince the people of the notion of a single malt whiskey coming from India. You know, people in Britain love their Indian food. They were saying, like, you know, we could understand chicken tikka masala from India and Bollywood music. And single malt, no chance. You know, that's right. The kind of reaction. And it took a while to basically convince them. So initially, we adapted a lot of blind tasting strategy where you were provided with 6 different whiskies, 3 from India and 3 from Scotland. And then you got to basically go through your nose and senses and then figure out what is what and how old it is. So unsurprisingly for us, like 99% of the people got it totally wrong. They thought the Indian were the Scotch and the Scotch were the Indian, and then, you know, completely muck around. And that basically gave us a enormous confidence that we got a good product. Now it's a question of, you know, convincing the consumers. So then we got three major awards, especially two across the Atlantic, just like, you know, shaking up the whiskey wall. And then more and more people started to basically appreciate and then try it. And then they slowly built the brand one brick at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then here we are now. We are not even present across the Indian subcontinent. And we could pretty much sell whatever that we produce just in India. We don't need to go outside. But our vision is to build the brand as an international brand across the world in the major markets. And that's the reason why priority has been given to the export market. Still, we haven't fulfilled perhaps 30% of the demand in India.
Okay.
Even at the international price point.
Okay. And I would definitely advocate that you continue to sell it outside the Indian market for the benefit of the rest of us, Ashok. Well, Ashok, do me a favor, in just a couple of minutes, because we got to get to Monica and give her some time to talk about the last two wonderful Somros cream liqueurs we're going to taste. But I am tasting also the Kadmenbaum, which is aged in different casks, also a single malt whiskey. But so what is this 100% Indian barley on this, or is this also a blend of the two different barleys? Or
95% of Indian barley and 5% of peated barley from Scotland, roughly. The word Kadambam is a Tamil word which is spoken in south of India, which means mixer. So we have a stew made in the southern city of Madras, where they use often about like 9 to 10 different vegetables in a single stew. So the flavors emanating out of the stew is like so complex and awesome. So I got that inspiration from the stew because I am hailing from Madras myself.
Okay.
So then I thought like I wanted to create a whiskey with a multiple flavor in it. So what we did is, 95% of the barley coming from India, 5% from Scottish, both are distilled separately as usual. And then the combination started off its maturation in an ex-bourbon barrel, then into ex-rum cask, because we produce our own rum. And then from there to ex-brandy cask, and then from there to ex-Oloroso sherry cask. So okay, it's matured in four different barrels consecutively to pick up the different flavors that it can offer. So that's what you see. Like, look at the nose. It's like so complex and a lot of fruitiness and sweetness, but you need to have time to break up the flavor. However, on the palate, you get like a nice whip of a toffee note, which comes from the rum cask, and a little bit of herbally note from the brandy cask, and the sherry cask gives like a lot of dried sweetness and dried fruitness, and then a whip of peat. So the whole experience is like enormously complex. And then again at 100 proof, 50% alcohol, it's just like, you know, juicy, and you can sip it for a whole day.
It's beautiful. And I always love when something's aged in a sherry cask, because it also brings that little bit of oxidative note that sherry has.
Yeah.
About how long does it spend in each cask? Are we talking about a matter of just a couple months?
Roughly,
or so?
It started off with the ex-bourbon barrel, and then roughly about a year to year and a half on each of the other three barrels.
Okay.
So the total age of the whiskey is roughly about like six and a half years old.
Okay. This is a wonderful, wonderful expression, and nothing is overdone. It's very well balanced, just kind of all the way through.
Indeed.
Very, very nice. Monica, so we have the mango Somros and we have the chai Somros. Which one should I do first?
Let's do the chai.
Okay.
And then, you know, while we're doing that, you know, our animal is a little bit different, right, in terms of the process to make it. You know, it's a liqueur, and so what's really important for us is that recipe. and that mouthfeel and the usages and that kind of stuff. And so, you're taking a sip now, and what do you see on the nose? What are your thoughts?
Well, I definitely get the Indian spice on the nose. I mean, the big time. And actually, I haven't even had a sip yet. It's a remarkable smell, actually.
Thank you. So the idea here was to, you know, the cream liqueur category itself is about 40 years old. It's actually not that old at all. But not only sort of bring Indian flavors to the category, but sort of just elevate the category in general. And so you see that, you know, our liquids are a lot lower viscosity. They're lower ABV. They don't have an afterburn. There's no preservatives. The only preservative is the rum. It still has the 2-year shelf life, but we really wanted to sort of create a cream liqueur that was nothing like what was on the market, both in terms of flavor profile, but also in terms of the ability to use it throughout the day, throughout the year, right? I think cream liqueurs have this idea of being used sort of after dinner and during, for the US, the warmer months, right? Mm-hmm. And we wanted to sort of crack that open a bit. So that's what you're getting.
Monica, excuse me, what is the ABV on these?
It's 13.5%.
Okay.
Awesome. So it's still, you know, still decent, but you're not getting sort of this afterburn, you know, and so it's crafted for a very specific experience, I would say.
Absolutely. It makes sense because I think we'll taste the mango in just a second. Going to be great in cocktails. I can see this being great as a modifier also
in
a lot of different drinks as well.
Yeah, we have a lot of cocktails on our website, but what we've seen people do with it is quite incredible. So we've seen everything from putting it in a gin fizz and using it in place of the egg white. It will actually fizz up, which is quite lovely. And you're adding a cardamom flavor to the sort of the gin fizz cocktail. Our easy favorite ones, of course, are in things like cold brew or coffee or even tea as a creamer. And so we're seeing a lot of that as well in brunch cocktails, actually around the country.
Yeah.
It's quite fun.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the gin fizz thing, because I was trying to get my head around the sort of almost bitter orange or zest, like, you know, citrus zest note on the chai, almost like a bergamot orange kind of note. What is the citrus that's going on in the chai one?
So I think it's just a combination of the ingredients, because as you know, you can't actually put citrus in cream.
Right, because it'll curdle,
right? It's real cream, right? It'll curdle. And so I think it's just a matter of the notes. You've got the saffron and the rose, and I think that combination with the cream is somehow picking up, because we get orange and we get dreamsicle sometimes, and people sort of mention that.
Very much so. And actually that makes sense with the, as you said, with the saffron. Okay. Wow, very, very interesting. Lovely. Grab a glass. I'm going to pour the mango here. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the mango while I'm pouring myself some?
Yeah, so this is, so both flavors actually are quintessential Indian flavors that you will get in like non-alcoholic beverages or desserts, that kind of stuff. So the chai is, you know, a very, very, like I was mentioning, very common in North India. People laugh because the chai latte, for example, has gotten so popular in the US. It's that cardamom flavor, right? And so I think, you know, we have Starbucks to thank for that. But that has become very mainstream. Mango, I will say, is an absolute religion in India. Like if you go, you know, during mango season, people are going mad over mango. And this one's made with the Alfonso mango, which is also quintessential Indian. And has a lovely history, similar actually, attached to Goa and attached to the Portuguese, in terms of a unique mango that was crafted by the Portuguese in India. And so what's interesting about this is it's just the mango, versus the chai has several ingredients. This is just the mango, but I think you'll still get notes of other fruit. So I wanted to ask you about what are you tasting?
You know, I get, and this would make sense with mango, cause I get a little bit of a tropical melon kind of note off the top of my head. It's a great question. I mean, and the thing, mango is such a funky fruit, right? Because it can actually be kind of pungent and almost kind of stinky at times and have sort of, and
absolutely,
this is, it's very restrained. And then I almost get, you know, what I would say maybe also right off the top of my head is like a little white stone fruit kind of note,
absolutely,
but not overly ripe, kind of like, you know, like a white peach,
we get peach a lot, right? And so it's quite fun because although it's just a mango, the Alfonso itself feels like a hybrid of several sort of fruits. And what we get a lot is feedback from mixologists that it's not as cloying as other mango liqueurs on the market, right? This is quintessential Indian mango. People recognize the flavor right away, but that they can use it in a variety of things because it doesn't have that oversweetness to it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very lovely. And actually, both the chai and the mango were quite different than what I was expecting, you know, going in. They're very, very nice. And 13.5%. Yeah, it's a very good thing. Yes. And 13.5% means you can have 2 cups of coffee in the morning. decorated.
That's exactly right. So what we, that's really funny that you say that. So what we love is that people, you know, sort of on a golf course, for example, we have some golf courses that starting to carry this as a morning drink because they don't get much drink revenue before 5 p.m. And so, you know, you can maybe have a Bloody Mary or mimosa, but those are a bit acidic. And so if you do this instead, put the mango at my, one of my favorites is mango and pineapple coconut water. It makes a very lovely, like easy sipping cocktail, but it's like 3% alcohol at the end of the day.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. Or, you know, mango with tequila later in the day, you can add that sort of bite to it if you would like. Mezcal, like you were mentioning before, the smokiness against the cream is really lovely.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. And I love actually some whiskeys and scotch with the chai as well. But adding some peat to the chai is quite lovely. Creates a lovely cocktail.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. And you mentioned golf when you get up early in the morning and play golf. Phil, this may actually help your golf game, buddy. Because from what I've learned here on this show, your golf game needs a lot of help. I think Ashok can attest to that from what I understand.
I've tried all types of alcohol to improve my golf game. And it's
But we'll have to see if this one works. I'll definitely send you some.
We'll give it a try. Just so everybody knows, for the record, Phil's a pretty good baseball player, and he plays in a hardball baseball league around here. So maybe maybe you should just stick to baseball, buddy.
Yeah, that could be it. The universe itself. Baseball might be my sport.
Well, great. Thank you, everyone, very much for sharing your products and stories and insight. It was really a lot of fun. Monica, do me a favor. Tell people one more time where we can find Somros Cream Liqueurs online and on the interwebs and all that good stuff.
Yeah. No, thank you. It's somrus.com is the website. Tons of recipes, where to buy tool everywhere in the U.S. that we're at. And then enjoy Somros on all of the social sites as well.
Awesome. And Viggy or Vrushab, would you tell us where we can find Coffee Fanny?
Yeah, sure. So you can actually find us in our social handle is KAFIFENI. That's Coffee Fanny. And you know, we do have a website, you know, that's heritagespiritsllc.com. So, you know, it's a mothership company that is, you know, trying to like, you know, work on different spirits as well. So, but yeah, I think, and you'd also find on our website and our social handles as to where you can buy it and things around that. So we might be having, you know, a competition soon on cocktails and things around that. So please, you know, if you're interested, DM us and we'll send you a bottle.
Oh, very good. Excellent. And Ashok, where can we find more information about Amrit Whiskey?
Yeah, our web is Amrut, amrutdistilleries.com, or Glass Revolution Imports, which is our partner in the US, hashtag Inspire Spritz. So you'll get all the information. It's widely across almost like 47 states across the United States. So it's not a big deal to find a bottle.
Yeah, excellent. And Jane, real quick, to Glass Revolution Importer, can people look up your book online?
You certainly can. The website is glassrev, just glassrev.com.
Excellent. And Phil, well, where can we find PM Brokerage, buddy, besides me coming to your house?
Yes, right. I've got the Instagram and I've got a website, philmbrokerage.com. That'll link every available partner that I have, importers like Glass Revolution and a few others, and independent brands like Coffee Fanny will be listed on the website. And the Instagram is my name, Phil, PhilminisSale. And that's it's pictures of cats, pictures of booze, and pictures of me playing baseball here and there.
Good, good, and no golf pictures. So that we've cleared. I'm sorry, man.
I wouldn't dare.
Well, thank you, everyone, so much. I really appreciate everyone's time, and it was really interesting and very tasty. And I hope the next time all of y'all are down here in New Orleans and we can travel again, it would be good to meet everyone in person. And please keep me up to date on what everybody's doing and when the new stuff comes out and all that good stuff. So thank you. I appreciate it.
We have homework to do. We've got to create a cocktail that features one of each of our products at some point.
Okay, well, that'll be our homework, Phil. Me and you will do it. Excellent. Perfect. Thank you, everybody. Have a great day. And friends, we're going to take a brief musical interlude, and I'll be back with my parting shot. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show. Happy to have you here, friends. As always, as we've noted in our show notes, and I'll say it again here, our featured interview in the opening segment of the show was recorded a little ways before the U.S. general election. Just saying that, just so you know. So there you go. We got some more shows coming out for you here before the end of the year. And then we'll have our usual holiday break around Christmas and January 1st. And we'll be back in January with some new ones. But we've got a whole wave of podcasts still to come out. So stay tuned for those, friends. And here's our parting shot. And since we have recorded this somewhat recently, obviously lots of things that we could talk about here today. But one of the things that I'm going to talk about as we see COVID continuing to spike, and in fact, spiking into the worst way here in the United States, as it has since the beginning of the pandemic. Lots of things we could pick apart there. But one of the things that I want to mention specifically, I think most of the listeners, all y'all out there, know that one of the hardest hit sectors in the States and really around the planet, I would assume, is the hospitality industry, you know, bars and restaurants and things like that. So this is the particular little thing that I want to say. I'm somewhat surprised and disappointed at times in the flippant response or nature of the responses and opinions that people are talking about when they say, oh, we just need to close restaurants and bars. Now, look, I am 100% pro-science. Don't get me wrong. Bars and restaurants are a problem, especially if people aren't doing what they're supposed to do, meaning the patrons. There's a hell of a lot of that going on. And especially if the restaurants and bars themselves are not doing what they're supposed to do. And there's a hell of a lot of that going on. Just for an example, where I live over in Old Mandeville across the lake from New Orleans in St. Tammany Parish, if you're not familiar with the area, there's a whole hell of a lot of places and establishments that are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, seeing staff not wearing masks, no social distancing in their establishments, all of that. That is all a problem. Do I think that bars and restaurants would be less guilty, for lack of a better way to put it, of spreading coronavirus if patrons and businesses did what they were supposed to do? Sure. But that's not really what I'm talking about here. We do know that restaurants and bars, indoor environments, people being crowded, drinking alcohol, so on and so forth, can cause a spread of coronavirus. It's a problem. And right now that it's spiking, we probably do in many locations need to close restaurants and bars. But what I'm getting at, friends, is this sort of flippant nature that somebody will come on TV and say, oh, we just need to close restaurants and bars. It's not as easy as that, right? There's so much livelihood, so much of the economy depends on restaurants and bars, the people working there, the businesses themselves. In a place like New Orleans, as we all know, it's part of our culture. It's part of our fabric, our DNA, if you will. You cannot close restaurants and bars if you are not going to support the individuals that work in them and the establishments themselves with meaningful financial support and assistance. Obviously, I realize a lot of health professionals that come on TV and they talk about these things are people that you read in interviews. That's not their bailiwick. They don't necessarily think down those lines, and that's not necessarily their job to do so. They're just talking about epidemiology and public health and talking about science, and rightfully so. 100% correct. I support it 100%. But there has to be a sensitivity and there has to be an understanding that any time that we are shutting down a place, that there are financial and economic impacts. A lot of people live paycheck to paycheck that work in that industry, access to food, access to healthcare. A lot of people don't have health insurance, all of this. There's a huge amount of ramifications that come when places get shut down, and especially when we kind of go through these starts and fits. You open up, you think things are going to start to improve, and then you get slapped back and shut down again. We need to provide direct financial support, I'll say it again, to these establishments, these business owners, and in particular, the people who work in these places in a meaningful, effective way. It is absolutely critical. Now, do I think that's going to happen anytime soon? Because certainly with this administration here in the United States have completely abdicated any sort of leadership on multiple fronts, but especially with the coronavirus. Jackass is out playing golf and doesn't give a damn about any of us out here. So do I think, and you know, throw in Congress and them not getting anything done either. Do I think something's meaningful is going to happen on this front? No, I really don't. Sadly, even as restaurants and bars are being forced to close again, I don't think anything's going to change. I don't think any help is going to come until after January 20th. It's tragic. It's sad. We should expect and demand better and give back and help those who give us so much in the hospitality industry. Friends, that's our parting shot. Here's to you.